Good morning. Today is Tuesday, the 9th of November. Joining us this morning is, well, the guy from REDEC, Mr. Greg Foster. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, I'm not staring out at the Monterey Bay, but you know, I'm looking at Humble Bay. Staring, so I figured
I wish I was. I'm staring at a laptop actually, but
oh. And you don't even have me on there. That's kind of interesting.
No, okay. Well, I was streaming earlier, but didn't want to have that echo going.
Yeah, well, we all appreciate that. Are you ready for your question?
I am. Fire away. I think I got it last time.
Yeah, I think. There was an interesting streak here. Four or five people got them kind of all in a row. So we will. Yeah, I know. Can you tell we're getting to the end of this book?
Yeah, there you go.
All right. This is a Southern Humble question.
Okay.
Why sometimes do you see large red or orange balls attached to high tension power lines?
So the planes or the helicopters don't fly into them.
Like they did in 64. Ding, 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 ding.
Exactly.
That's a cream puff for you.
That was pretty easy.
Yeah.
That's pretty easy.
Balls are found in areas where there are low flying aircraft. And they're put there to mark the wires so that the aircraft don't fly into them. Yeah.
That was. I appreciate the softball there. This may. I think. Oh no, I'm on in December. I'm sure. But I think.
Yeah. No.
So I can end the year on a high note.
Yeah. Don't get too carried away here with your insight.
I can blow it next month.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, we have survived the windstorm thus far here. A lot of stuff hasn't happened yet, like bringing people back online. So,
right.
it's kind of an interesting situation, Greg, when you talk about weather and winter storms and things of that nature. With the folks that you talk to and work with, do they regularly have Plan C and D ready?
I think if you'd asked me that question a while, 20 years ago, I would have said maybe. But I think now that there's a greater realization that we need to move forward. So in fact, and move forward, as a result of these disasters, our learning, et cetera, that we're getting better. And I think about when we had that first fiber optic line installed by, I think it was SBC at the time. And we as a community essentially said, okay, great. Now we need a second one. And they said, basically the fiber optic company, SBC, was saying it's time out, or it could have turned into AT&T. There was a bunch of merging going on at the time. But they said, oh, no, this thing's engineered to be fine. It's no problem. And, of course, I grew up in Humboldt County, and I said, right. The power always goes out, right? And it's just the way it is. And so it was interesting because we had done work with the county and some state money to do some route planning and some work on this. And the day after Christmas, I can't remember what year it was, like 2005, 2006, a windstorm, ironically, broke the fiber optic line. It was the day after Christmas. And so I remember my parents and sister and brother-in-law, I think, and my wife, went to the town to do some post-Christmas shopping and then came back and said, well, nothing works. And I started trying to call people and, my landline and my cell phone and things weren't working, or I had to call one number worked, another one didn't work. And so obviously, that fiber broke and it took down everything. And that happened four times in a year. I think it was a windstorm, a fire, and a backhoe, and, something else. And so, immediately we went and pivoted to the, oh, one line's, fine, the company, to, oh, well, maybe it's not.
Yeah.
And so I think we're seeing more of this. And, as a conversation yesterday, talking about housing development, especially out in the rural areas, where there's new standards around roads going in and out of communities and for rural development. And that comes from lessons learned, over the last couple of years, especially in Paradise, where people literally could not get out and away from the fire because of the lack of road infrastructure. So now they're talking about, yeah, you need to have three lanes, right? One for the cars coming out and two for the trucks going in to some of these new developments if they want to do that.
Three lanes?
And, you know, what? Well, and you know, I don't know. It's wide enough that people can get out and people can get in, right? And that might be 2.5 lanes or, you know, just a certain
way.
I'm not completely familiar with it. But it's one of those things where you go, oh, that's pretty excessive, you know, given the amount of traffic on a daily basis. But when there's an emergency, and obviously fires are now a very common occurrence, it saves lives, and that's certainly worth it. So I think we're learning. We're getting better. We're starting to take this stuff a little more seriously.
Now, that's an edict coming down out of Sacramento, or that's a recommendation?
Be honest, they were talking about it in this meeting I was in, and I don't know if that's an edict come down or it's a standard that's recommended or exactly what that's about. But you know, I was talking to a friend of mine who is a fire captain who went into Paradise. He's from this area. And, you know, talking about how they just could not, you know, they couldn't get the trucks up to the fire because of all the traffic coming down the hill,
right.
People abandoning their cars, right? And so they were literally pushing cars off the road with their trucks trying to get to the fire. Well, that's really unacceptable.
Yeah, you know, that one makes a lot of sense. KINS, yeah. News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Next time on KINS in the 6 o'clock hour as he explains pet behaviors, different fun facts, tips, and all sorts of info about your animals and the way they think and act.
Here are just some of the things that kids learn when they have pets in their life.
If you're an animal lover, this is absolutely the program you need to hear.
You know, vocalizations are a very important part of animal communication and their language. Hi, this is Warren Eckstein. Hear my daily pet tip weekdays on KINS FM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:22. Technical upgrades are always quite delightful. We're back with Greg Foster. Yes, we were kind of talking along those lines anyway.
I love the scramble during the break.
yeah, well, quiet.
Smooth as silk, baby.
I heard a stat this morning on a call that I was on that said in California, 7% of the population lives in non-metro areas. Kind of brought the old focus into play why we're kind of left out so often and so regularly. I mean, you know, such a huge...
And that's a big reason why we're here at this conference. It's an organization, it's a good organization that has a lot of influence in Sacramento, and they put together sort of a economic platform every year and use that to push legislation and regulatory changes. And, you know, there's a lot of state legislators and others here. And so there's a group of us here, not a big group, but, you know, Scott Adair from the county, me, Connie Stewart from Humboldt State, and a couple others. And we're really here to make sure that our priorities get into that mix and people understand some of the issues that we have. And, you know, whatever the issue, you know, the key is to, you know, obviously we don't have the electoral power that even the southern part of our districts have. But, you know, you don't give up, right? You get in there and you try to get your priorities in there. And so that's what we're doing over the next day and a half. And
well, Greg, are our issues that unique, or is it just because we don't have a voting block of significance that...
It's a little of both. You know, and I'm also on this what's called a Legislative Action Committee for the Statewide Economic Development Organization. It's been around for a long time. And, you know, I think about housing and the issues of housing in the urban areas, in the rural areas, even though we both face very, on the surface, very similar challenges, really, which is a lack of, you know, housing, right, and building not catching up with the population shifts or population changes. And you know, you see discussions about housing going on in the urban areas, and the difference in scale between the size of developments that they can do in the urban areas or need in the urban areas and in the rural areas really is the critical difference, the key difference.
Well, doesn't the guy that owns the Kings, isn't he a home builder? You know, I don't see too many home builders in Humboldt County being able to even sponsor a Little League team, let alone a, you know, professional team.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And so when you talk about the size of developments, whether they be, you know, multifamily towers or you know, more traditional sort of suburban development, we don't have the scale. And so, you know, there's a real difference in terms of how those programs can work for us or not work, or what we need in terms of state investment or federal investment or whatever to kind of get us over that hump. And when you go down and this part of this rural exchange also, where all these rural counties get together and through this organization called CALED. And it's interesting because, 20 years ago, none of us really would have been talking about housing as a really top issue, and now we all are. And we need to let the state know that your solution to housing may not work for us. The other piece is these programs are so complex, you know, the state housing programs and federal housing programs. And so in an urban area, you could put, given the scale and the amount of money they're looking at, huge staffs just to manage these programs, right? Well, we don't have that at the local levels in the rural communities. And so they're so complex that some rural communities just say, you know, we just don't have the bandwidth, the people to even try to pursue these things. And so it's not just a policy question. It's also, you know, trying to dig in and make that those programs work better for those of us.
And well, and
so we're small, but we're loud.
I would think, that's never been anything attributed to me. You figure out which side of that equation works.
Exactly.
But for us, we've also got the component of the labor force, and
Right. Honestly,
some of the permitting process too. You know, I don't think I would suggest that a lot of the smaller, very rural communities like ours, we're not used to it. So our building community isn't used to it. Our supply resource supply, you know, the building yards. Guys like that aren't used to it, but neither are the permitting processes used to it. So, you know, if you're used to walking at half speed and you think that's full speed, all of a sudden here comes somebody walking at full speed, and you have nothing in common with them. And I see it kind of as an entire systemic challenge for the rural areas where we are. You know, if we didn't have the mill or the historical mills in the area, you know, now we're having to import all this stuff in addition to all the other challenges. I mean, there are certainly counties more challenged than we are.
Yeah, the times are really different. And that's some of it is a buildup of change that was kind of hidden. And I've talked about it on the show before about the looming labor force crisis that was being discussed back in the mid aughts, right? 2005, 2006. This huge, you know, population of baby boomers began to retire, and there were, you know, some interruptions in that, the Great Recession, COVID. But if you go back and just sort of take those, for lack of a better term, anomalies out, and just look at the trend in labor force, then you can see it's like, well, what they were talking about in the, you know, 10, 15 years ago, is really coming true. It's just it's been oscillating up and down the line a bit because of these other issues, and so it's that's a huge issue, and we talk about that, you know, when people are talking about that, it's like, well, you know, part of the housing strategy not only has to be how to you know, change the process and reduce costs where you can, But there's also got to be like training people to actually do the work or finding the labor somehow to do that actual work. And I wrote a column in the Times Standard and ran a couple Sundays ago where, you know, I talk about the Wizard of Oz where, you know, Dorothy starts in black and white in Kansas and then wakes up and, you know, the iconic line of Technicolor comes up, "Oh, Toto, I don't think we're in Kansas anymore." And I think that's where we are. Now, interestingly, that movie ends with her saying there's no place like home. Assuming that, you know, I'm back in Kansas in 1939. The movie is probably shot in 37, 38, right? I'm back in Kansas and there's just no place like this and it'll be wonderful, right? Well, that was 1939.
Oh,
so wonderful in a couple of years, right?
I thought that the line was there's no place like Nome. And that's why the Alaska,
yeah, it's very up there. It's very cold. So you know, but no place like home is like, oh, I'm back here, and you know, it'll always be wonderful. And it's like, well, you know, in a couple of years, that world changed completely, right? Because
right.
of World War II, and subsequently, so Kansas was a much different place now, even 20 years ago, than it was in 1938-39, and so. You know, that's where I think we are in some ways.
Well, we'll talk about our Kansas perspective when we come back. It's 8:31.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now.
I keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
It's 8:33. We're back talking shop this morning with Greg Foster. We're going a cappella this morning.
Sounds great.
Yeah, well, it depends on what end of the speaker you're on that one.
It's true.
Yeah. Don't break out.
Give me more time to pontificate.
Yes. Just don't sing, man. Just do not sing.
No worries.
Yeah. So what is, you know, at this economic summit that you're at, is it typically groups like your entity, or is it city and county that carry the title of economic development? You know, what is the cast of characters? What do you consist of?
It's really all of the above, and but the notion and sort of the operating principle around this group is that they are looking at California as a series of regions, and so we're part of the North Coast region that really runs from Del Norte down to Sonoma County. And which is, you know, I think in some ways a good thing, because, you know, California really is very diverse and really kind of broken into these very different regions. And so what they try to do is, you know, we generate and provide input from our region on the issues that are affecting the North Coast, and then that gets put into their annual work plan, essentially, on legislation and what they're pushing for. And again, you know, we show up because if we don't, then they don't know what, you know, regarding whether or not we actually get all of our priorities in there, at least we're in there making the try.
Right, or you get your phone call returned.
Exactly.
With a couple of the redistricting plans, our area, you know, what you just referenced is kind of similar to what the Assembly District is today, but there's a thought of going east-west and running a line over to the state line, and that, you know, we would be rural, wood, water, a little bit of fishing,
right.
and a lot of ag. When you look at that, if that's going to be the entity or the area that is represented, I would think that we have more in common going east than we do going south. You know,
well, on some issues that's true, and in some issues it's not.
Okay.
And I remember a couple of years ago at the summit, and when it was in a discussion and talking about water policy, and
sure.
And Congressman Costa was there, and he's from down in the valley, and I said to him, we were talking about what's our policy, and of course water is a huge issue and has been forever in California, and I said, let's not make the mistake of saying that rural areas all have a sort of same water issues, right? And I said,
right.
Congressman Costa here and I will have probably very different perspectives on how we deal with water policy in California. And we are more about the health of the rivers and the protecting the fishing industry and salmon runs and all that. And that means we want the water. And the Congressman has obviously like agriculture, and he would like to feed some more of that into the water project. And and we both have valid concerns, I think, and we just got to figure out how to make it work. And we're both really the victims of water policy from, decades and decades
a
ago.
A century ago,
promised,
yeah.
Promised 200% of the water to everybody, right? And now with conditions changing with drought and some other things. So there are issues that are the same and issues that are not the same. And this is where we kind of come and hash it out.
Okay, so this is almost like a brain trust then, rather than a scoping kind of a present right. company accepted.
Yeah, there's a brain trust, and then there's me. I think that we come down as a group in from Humboldt County or the region, we come in with a consistent message. Then that works to our advantage. At the very least, we know what's going on, and we know what to try to stop if there's something we don't like as well. So.
Right. Now, is from the county perspective versus REDEX perspective versus Humboldt State's perspective, three different points of view on a fair amount of the topics. Does it matter that you're not all speaking with a common voice, but that you're getting different perspectives from the same area on the same topic, with the nuances being shared?
Well, and we all have our sort of consistency, but it's really important that we're here, that we provide a united front, right? And so because we're so small, and clearly what the county does, what the university does, and what other entities do in Humboldt County affect each other. And quite honestly, a lot of the people who might be putting together the strategy don't really know about what we're about. And so, I remember years ago, there used to be a group called the Economic Strategy Panel, which was out of the governor's office. And, they just really had no clue about what we were about up there, where we are. And so now when we come down, we go, we're converting to Cal Poly, and the airport has gone from one to four airlines, and we have Google landing a fiber. And, Connie's been doing amazing work on the broadband stuff. We start listing all that stuff out, and people go, oh, huh. And it's like, well, what do you know about Humboldt County? Well, we used to go up there as a kid and play in the Redwoods. It's like, well, okay, that's beautiful. We got that, and that's important, but we're really a much different thing. And so when we're talking about what we believe will be big, we have big growth pressure now, but I think in 5 years it's going to be even worse. I mean, this is the Cal Poly change. It's really a game changer, but then you throw in the wind energy and the Google fiber and the Nordic and the, everything else. It's like, holy cow, we're not in Kansas anymore, he says.
Right. Right. Now, are there lessons that you can get from some of your buddies that are down there that will help make the transition into an economy that's growing instead of one that's stagnant a little less painful?
Well, I certainly
painful.
Hope so. I mean, there's some lot of good ideas out here. I don't get out of Humboldt that often, unfortunately. But when I do, I like coming here and talk to my colleagues in communities that are similar or, may have experienced something similar to what we're experiencing, but maybe a little further back in time. Interestingly, in the airport, there's one of the people I was friends with, and he's no longer at the San Luis Obispo Airport, but was the director of San Luis Obispo Airport, and we actually share a consultant with them. And talking about how their Cal Poly, a number of years ago, they landed a Trans-Pacific fiber there. And our consultant talked about, boy, when that happened, all of a sudden we were getting all this interest from smaller technology companies or even larger technology companies looking at, oh, well, you know, we'll be by the airport, or we want to go into this community. And they really popped. And if you go to San Luis Obispo now, you know, especially the airport, which, you know, kind of the field I play in a lot, they've experienced a tremendous amount of growth. So, you know, we have to learn, you know, from the successes and the mistakes of other communities, and bring that back so we can you know,
manage
really
it.
Do the best we can to manage it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's a bit of a challenge too, because there's so many public lands and there's the private sector, and you know,
exactly.
I mean, you know what the attitudes are, you know.
Yeah.
So I think it really is an opportunity for some, but do you sense when you come back, as you'd said that Scott is there from the county, is that there starts to become a recognition at the county level that perhaps there has to be some flexibility and willingness, or does this stuff just still get reported to the soups, and if they go thumbs up or thumbs down, you know, either the project lives or the project dies?
Right. You know, I think there is, you know, talking to, you know, some of the cities and the county, you know, there is an openness to, I think, some new ways of doing business and a realization that, that, you know, what's got us here to this point is not going to take us forward. Now, you know, how that manifests itself and what changes will happen, I don't know. You know, ask me in a couple of years, we'll see if they actually, you know, there was big change in that or not.
Well, I would suggest that taking three-lane roads to two-lane roads isn't necessarily the most positive thing we could be doing as we're anticipating growth.
Well, you know, and those are, you know, we do have, I think, as a result of, you know, fires and some of the other things that have befallen the state in the last decade or so, and even less than that, you are going to see more state rules coming down about that to mitigate loss. And it's not just the state, right? It's we're looking at, we were trying to, you know, close a deal on a real estate purchase of a commercial building, and the insurance companies now are hedging your risks.
Whole different dynamic there, too.
Yep.
KINS, yep. News and Information Time, it's 8:43.
Hey, folks, flying local is buying local. And with three airlines serving five destinations, Humboldt County has more choices than ever. Fly on American, Avelo, or United Airlines. We have service to Denver, Hollywood Burbank, LAX, Phoenix, and San Francisco airports. Now's the time to book and save on that getaway. Or have friends and family fly to visit the beautiful Redwood Coast. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org. Fly Humboldt, more flights to more destinations.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:48. We're back talking shop this morning with Greg Foster. Greg, more news at the airport?
Yes. Today we start a new service with a new airline called AHA Air, and that stands for Air, Hotel, and Adventure. And it's a new brand for an existing airline that's doing regional service in some on the west. And it's going to be flying to Reno. And so that service starts today. There's going to be a little celebration up at the airport if people want to come up and watch that new plane come in. It will arrive about 20 minutes to 11. And they're flying less than daily service, 3 days a week, to Reno. And eventually they'll be offering travel packages. So it won't just be flying, but you can buy a whole travel package in the Reno area. And then what we want to do is, you know, put together those packages for people down there to come up here and, you know, get the whole tours and hotel and everything in one big package. So it's pretty exciting.
We have the message too. Escape the fire.
Right.
Yeah, they've been getting drilled over there.
You know, that was a big issue for Tahoe, obviously, in Reno this summer. I went through Reno. My way out driving to Montana and, you know, up over the Sierras and down into Reno, it was so smoky.
Yeah.
And so we have, you know, obviously not only just a beautiful area, but an area where you're not breathing a lot of smoke. And then, you know, on the 18th, we'll be launching the new service to Las Vegas with Avelo. So exciting month at the airport. We'll have seven destinations by the end of the month, which is more than we've ever had.
I hadn't thought of it. You know, everybody focuses on air carriers, not where they're headed.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, our strategy has been for a long time. Our strategy was we needed to recruit for an alternative hub, and then REDEC, working with the community, was able to do that. You know, with LAX and then Denver.
Right.
And now that kind of service attracts people. When you start getting new service, the airlines are really interested. And then with COVID, there was, you know, kind of a wiping clean of the slate, and so we were able to work with the airlines as they rebuild their networks to kind of get to the top of their list, and that's why we saw American come. Both AHA and Avelo is a startup airline, and then AHA was, a new brand for an existing regional carrier. And interestingly, people at Avelo I worked with when they were at another airline, and AHA is also run by a person I knew and am friends with who worked for another airline back in the past. So it's a very small industry, and luckily we kept Humboldt County on their radar as they made these decisions.
And that's why you're driving home instead of flying, right?
Well,
they know this guy named Foster.
I just
Foster.
Got down to visit my son and on the weekend, and so yeah, I need a bus ride to get back.
All righty, bud. See you when you get back home.
I'm glad you got the system put back together.
Hey, we are ready for anything. Thanks.
All right, perfect. All right.
Talk to you in a bit.
We'll talk to you later.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
You betcha. Bye, Greg.